You are listening to the Mission Matters Podcast Network, where we amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts.
Hello, and welcome to the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast on the Mission Matters Podcast Network. And welcome to the conversation that is designed specifically for you in your 40s and 50s, trying to navigate the uncertainty of the stage of life that you are in. I'm Scott, I'm your host, and I'm glad you're aboard as we embark on another episode together. I want to introduce you to Lance Abram. This is a bit of a different format a little bit here. There's a reason for this interview, and it's because many of you are listening. Many of you listening are considering what it looks like to go from success to significance, from success to meaningful work. And I thought it would be helpful to get a glimpse into someone's life who's already working in that space. They're working with meaning and purpose. So let me do a little introduction of Lance first. Lance has been on the leading edge of the battle against depression and suicide for more than 40 years. His personal traumas and tragedies, both as a teen civilian and as a U.S. military member, provide Lance with the experience, insight, recovery, and megaphone to tell his story in a way that is saving lives. Over the last two decades, as a veteran services counselor, he has discovered how both he, our military heroes, and everyone else can rise out of the depths of sadness and suicide risk when one shares their personal story. Lance is a U.S. Navy military veteran and holds a master's degree in education from Old Dominion University. For 20 years, he served as the director of Veteran Today, a military veteran service organization, and counseled scores of men and women struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder and other service-related issues. He is a certified peer support counselor and conflict mediation specialist. He's also the author of four books, including Create the Life You Want. An accomplished speaker, Lance has made over 1,000 public presentations since 2005, and his deeply personal experience with his topics maintains an authenticity with delivery that is deeply felt by the audience. Lance, thank you so much for taking your time to speak with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You have obviously been through a lot. Right. And I don't mean to minimize those who are listening haven't gone through a lot, but we're speaking to you about your experience and talking about your story, the story of your life from PTSD through some of the highlights of your life. First of all, what exactly is PTSD?
You know, those letters are used a lot, but rarely is it ever really explained sort of in a simplified way what post-traumatic stress disorder is. And let me just take a second to do that. Mm-hmm. Each letter means something very specific, and one builds off of the other. So let's take the stress. We all have stress. Stress is a part of life. Some stress is greater than others. Some of it we react to more than others, but we all have stress in our lives. And the stress is where something pushes us outside our norm. Something mm-hmm. pushes us outside of our norm. And when it happens a lot, it can get kind of heavy on your shoulders. And then there's this thing called traumatic stress, where it's over the top. It's jumping the shark. It's something that it's when your adrenal glands that are, they sit over top of your kidneys. It's when they fire in a way that really just is a jolt to your system. And this can, traumatic stress can happen in a lot of different ways. Everything from extreme as a bomb to something as small as your child falling down and you have that and you worry. Then there's a post-traumatic stress, and that's when you feel sort of the shadow of it after the fact. It's when you, that's post-traumatic stress is when you feel the shadow of that traumatic event. Mm. But the D part is the real debilitating part of this. And that's whenever those feelings of feeling it afterwards begin to impact your life in a negative way. You don't want to drive. You don't want to go outside. You're afraid of a relationship. There's a lot of ways that you can have disorder in your life from your post-traumatic stress. So basically, PTSD is when your life gets jacked up over something that happened to you over a short period or a long period of time, and your life is just out of order.
So we have an adversity which affects our beliefs, and therefore we suffer the consequences of the behavior comes out of that belief system.
Right. Is that right? Now, when you say beliefs, let me make a little bit of a shift there. It's the feeling that you get. It's not what you believe. It's not what's been affected. Your automatic feelings get readjusted because you can think, I'm okay. That's your thought pattern, but your body is saying something else. And I think we've all experienced that. So what happens is that traumatic event changes how your body feels and reacts to future events, no matter what you think.
Okay. So let me ask you, I'll give you an example. This is crazy, but I remember being in Old Alexandria. It's a historic town south of Washington.
King Street, I know it well.
King Street, yes. There, at the end of King Street, there is a Starbucks in a stone building. Beautiful place. I can remember going in there and getting a extra hot, no whip mocha. And the taste of that mocha was so, I loved it. I still get mocha from Starbucks today. When I have a mocha, that was years ago. When I have a mocha today, my first sip takes me to King Street in Old Alexandria. What we're talking about, we remember something and it immediately takes us back to where we were, and all the emotional bodily reactions are there.
That's what. Okay. So what you're having is a memory. Mm-hmm. So the cup of coffee triggers a memory. Now I'll ask you, is it a good memory or is it a not so good memory?
Well, it's a beautiful memory.
Okay.
It was a great trip.
That is the mirror opposite of PTSD, right?
Okay.
And that is because it's a fond memory. Therefore, your entire system sort of just steps back a minute and it calms down and it sort of relishes in the fondness and the romanticism of that memory. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to be with almost everything in life, right? But that's the ultimate.
That's the order versus disorder.
If you had burned yourself badly, and it caused you to pause every time you sip the first cup of coffee in a very odd way, that's the opposite of that. So that would be your post-traumatic experience. Okay. So that every cup of coffee, in fact, sometimes a cold drink, when you would go to put it to your lips, just putting a drink to your lips would trigger the memory of that, what happened in that coffee shop. Mm-hmm. Or passing an old stone building, because that was a, I'm trying to remember what that building was because I used to remember it very well.
Yeah, I can remember what it was.
It's one of the oldest buildings in all of Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And so there are things, you can be triggered by a lot of things that bring you back to that event, which seems disjointed. But so your example was the opposite of post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay. But if something bad had happened, okay. Mm-hmm. If you had, let me give you another example that people would relate to. If you took a pill that you had a bad reaction to, you would hesitate every time you took a pill for the rest of your life unless you got therapy for that.
Okay. It's a little aspirin for a headache. You would go through this,
you would physically feel, if it gave you hives, if you had taken any medication that gave you hives or you had any bad reaction to a medication, I actually have once, but it's possible because everyone's different. Everyone reacts to life different. Mm-hmm. Everyone reacts to every circumstance different.
Right.
And if you internalize that as being a bad experience, then every time you would open up a bottle of medicine, you would get that pop. And that's what PTSD can be like. Now, it cannot be just from one single event. Let's say somebody was in a bad marriage for a couple of years and that marriage tore them up inside. Now they no longer have the marriage. They might be 20 years past that marriage, but the thought of meeting somebody and having a good relationship could be too much for them to handle because the thought of just being with somebody and being open and vulnerable brings back that 2 years of prolonged stress, which resulted in PTSD, which now keeps them from having a normal, loving relationship at 60, which they didn't have at 30. And it's a shame when that happens.
Right. And that's the disorder that we speak about because
disorder and it's treatable.
And it's treatable. You do not speak from book knowledge. and from an academic sense, do you? No. You have gone through this and you speak with authority, not because of a course that you've taken or a degree
that's
right. But from personal experience.
Now, that's some heavy stuff. I don't care who you are, right? Male or female.
Right.
That is some heavy stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But I ignored all of it. Just sort of packed it away in my head, never addressed a bit of it. Never addressed a bit of it. Couldn't have a marriage. Couldn't have good intimate relationships over time, or hardly at all, only if it was a stranger. My life was a mess. I could not be married. I could not be happy. I could not have a mate. As soon as in my 50s, I have that disorder addressed with therapy. Now I'm married to a wonderful woman. We have a wonderful relationship. I could never ask for a more wonderful married life if I designed it on paper. Mm. Now that's an arc.
That's quite an arc. Let me go back to something you said. I never addressed any of it. Mm. Why? Why not?
I didn't know to. I did not know to. I had said, I wish I had a dollar for every time I said to somebody, oh, I've had stuff happen to me, but, you know, I'm a guy. It doesn't bother guys like it does women. What a stupid, sexist thing to say. And I'm an educated guy and I'm talking smack like this, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I just didn't think that it bothered me, right? Until a therapist pointed out that the reason that I was single, not able to have long-term loving relationships, not able to be intimate in quotation marks, normal way, wasn't until I was alerted to my behaviors, PTSD behaviors, that then once those were treated, I never thought in a million years I'd meet anybody. I thought my life was a single life from here on, right? And then literally within months of that therapy, I'm in a store, I'm flirting with the cashier like I often did, right? Mm-hmm. And something happened and I go outside and talk to my friend and I'm like, I don't know what just happened in there, but there's this girl in there. And he's like, oh, go get her number. And I'm like, what? No, I'm not getting, he's like, you know, if you don't get her number, I'm going to sort of rough you up.
Yeah.
And so I went in, got her number. We had a date. We've been together ever since. And it's like heaven.
So there had to be something that was like a tipping point from this male ego. I got this handled. It didn't affect me to seeing a therapist. What was the spark?
That's interesting. I mean, I can tell you exactly what that therapeutic thing was. So before I started therapy, I was working with a volunteer because I've been around a volunteer organization for 20 years. I was working with one of my volunteers and I snapped, got mad at him, broke down a door, broke a piece of furniture, and I was about to beat the living crap out of him. Right. Mm. And he's like, dude, something is wrong with you. And I'm like, I know. Okay. I get it. I mean, he's like, you're scaring me. I'm like, he just texted me. It's been 12, 14 years. He just texted me. We've got a close relationship. Mm-hmm. And, I said, yeah, me too. And so we're driving in the car. My VA doctor calls me about some medical thing, not about mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. Called me about a medical issue and they never call. And he's sitting next to me and they're like, how are you today? And I'm like, oh, it's been an interesting day. And they asked me the question. They said, this is what they did. And then you'll hear me talk about this so often. They asked me my story and I said, well, this is what just happened. Blah, 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 blah. And they're like, well, do you think you want to come in and see somebody? I'm like, yes. So I go in. I started seeing somebody about this anger. And then everything else started kind of coming out.
You're cascading. Yeah.
Because anger is fear and fear comes from what? So fear was like, well, what? And so I started talking about, you know, well, I regret not having things. Well, what makes you sad, Lance? What makes you so sad? Well, I don't have a family. I don't have kids. I don't have a wife. I don't have all, when I see other people having that stuff, I'm so envious and so sad over it. And we talked through it and talked through it. And they're like, well, why? I'm like, well, then I broke down and kind of told that, you know, thank God it was a male therapist because I couldn't have done it in front of a female therapist. Mm-hmm. Talking about my own dysfunctions and things that things don't go right when I try to get intimate and one thing leads to another. And the therapist made the connection. The therapist made the connection mm-hmm. and said, well, what happened to you when you were younger? And I'm like, what? They're like, he's like, well, you're not telling me something. I'm like, well, yeah. You know, and then I started talking about
that. Yeah.
About that. It's like, well, Lance, yeah, let's work on some of that. It wasn't, but it would say 6 months after that particular session that I met my wife. And that's how fast things can change when you get the appropriate help for it. But I thought at 52 years old, I guess I was 50 then, that that was it. I was never going to have anybody. I was going to be alone the rest of my life, you know? And I never dreamed that getting that help would change the whole course of my life. But there wasn't just that behavior that was such a mess for my PTSD. That was not the only behavior. Financially, I was living in a one-room office for 10 years and showering in the gym. And my life was in weird shape, right?
Yeah, right.
Relationships with family were not good. They were okay, but I really wanted to be away from everybody. I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody. I stayed to myself all the time. Real creative mind. So it doesn't mean your whole life has to be dysfunctional now. I was writing books. I was doing all kinds of things. I mean, at that time that happened, that was when my first big spirituality book came out. Mm-hmm. My God, I was a priest. I was a Catholic bishop, for God's sake, right? Counseling people with all their junk and all their problems. I was doing a lot of good work with people. I was doing a lot of great things. But guess who I wasn't doing the good work with? Myself.
Yourself. So you were a functional PTSD sufferer. Would you call it that? Or
part of my life was functional, and part of it was as dysfunctional as it comes. But folks with PTSD tend to be great fakers. We're good liars about our life. We lie to ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Not to others, but we're lying to ourselves. It's okay that I live in this one-room office. This is just a good way to live an economic life. It's okay that I'm single because I can be single and do my own thing. I can live on a, I used to always say this to my mother. I can live on a deserted island by myself for the rest of my life and be happy as can be. What a lie. What a lie that is, mm-hmm. right? Meanwhile, I'm over here counseling people and telling them, you shouldn't be alone. You need to have a good mate. You need to have satisfaction in your work. You should take responsibility for your life. And I could sing the song and tell everybody what they should be doing, but I wasn't talking to me, and I wasn't listening to me. I wasn't asking myself, Lance, you're 50 years old. What do you want your life to look like? How do you want to design your life? Like folks will hear me talk about it when I do talks to groups and things and counseling, I'll say to them, you have a choice. You're going to live by design or you'll live by default. And it's time to make that decision now. No matter how you've been living, no matter how I was living the first 50 years, it didn't matter. It was important to me because it was my life. And a lot of cool things happened and a lot of crappy things happened. But at 50, I made a decision. I was going to live by design or by default. And as soon as I chose by design, everything changed, and I mean everything. Immediately? No. Right. Incrementally? Yes.
Talk to me about some of what that is that you're currently doing now. Share with us some of, you and I talked in prep for this episode, and we don't have time for all the stuff that you're doing, but give us a glimpse of some of the stuff that makes up Lance's life today.
The thrust of what I do with my public speaking, my movie making, and being the director of the Veterans Organization is about reaching out to individuals. And as a priest, my job was to facilitate spiritual growth. That's what I did as a priest. Mm-hmm. Today, I facilitate the growth of joy and whatever facet that takes. Wherever we have to look at someone's life. And so I'm making movies to help all of America and veterans identify what does PTSD look like and what can you do to raise yourself out of it. I work with veterans on a weekly basis to take a look at their lives and find where they are and where they want to be and help them map a journey that will take them not to more money, not to more influence, not to all of those things that you would generally think are success in life. We map out their journey to joy. Where does their heart want to be? So that's some of what we do. I've written 4 books. I've got a couple more in my head that I'm going to get out. I'm blessed to be able to sit and write a book in a couple of days and get it out there once the thoughts are in my head. What else do I do? And I tend to forget all the time when I'm talking to you.
Well, tell us about your marriage and the freedom that you have right now.
Well, you know, when I dated this girl for 10 years, this woman for 10 years, and then I was getting ready to take my mother through hospice, and I didn't want to do it alone. And I said, Joe, will you come stay with, live with me down here? Because I had just moved down to, because my mom asked me to move down. So I left Joe and I left everything up in Northern Virginia and I came down to North Carolina. And so I lived there for a couple of years and my mom began to decline. And then I knew that her life was going to end in a couple months. And I didn't want to do this alone because I thought I could do everything alone. Right. So I asked Joe to come down. And of course, she left her job. She left everything. Never said maybe. It was simply come get me. That's it. Went up, got her, brought her down. And I helped my mother die with Joe by my side. And it made me realize how much I really did love this woman, to watch how gentle and kind she was with my mother, and to watch and to be there for me when I was just crushed, because that's what hospice does to someone. When you love someone, it crushes you. And then on the other side of that, our retirement here to North Carolina, our retirement to Florida, which is funny because we're not retired. Well, she is, not me.
By choice.
By choice. Yes, she wants to be on the beach and watching TV shows and doing the stuff she does. And I want to be doing all the awesome things I'm doing. And that's a great choice. You don't have to have either or. You can have a couple where one wants to be laid back, do nothing, retired, see the sunset. And then the other one of us wants to be engaged, working, creating, moving, going. And that's completely compatible because she honors me and I honor her. And boy, is that a love affair.
Yeah.
Where we just kind of collide into each other during the day and the evening, and we have our lives, but we love each other deeply and we love where we're at. And thank God we're not alone. Mm-hmm. Before I was treated for my PTSD, that wasn't possible. But now it is the cornerstone of my existence because I live each day. And no matter what, I will say this, no matter what projects I'm on to fulfill myself, what's always top of mind for me is, what does she need now? What does she need today? What can I do for her today? Mm-hmm. I have an opportunity to do for her what I could never do for anybody else. And even caring for my mother, and I'm a mama's boy, and all the stuff I did for my mother, for Joe, it's like, if she lays her head down and passes before me, I want to be able to say to myself and to the world, I did my best. I gave it everything I had, in spite of my desire to run all over the world and do all the stuff I do. I still took care of my woman. And that will be something that will be the greatest joy of my life.
Was she the buffer to you relapsing at all after your mother's death?
That's an interesting question. And no one's ever asked. I don't very often get asked a question.
I'm weird.
Okay. Well, there's one thing that's clear. I made a joke at my mom's funeral just a couple of days ago. 2 days ago, we finally buried her ashes up in the hill. It was just 2 days ago, Saturday.
No.
And I made a joke while we were there. It was a very fun time. It was a wonderful family time. I couldn't do that before. Mm. I couldn't do that before. And I kept myself together. And I said, you know, I looked at my sister-in-law, Miko, and I said, and they've only been married about 5 or 8 years. I said, Miko, I love you for the way you manage my brother. And then I looked at my wife and I said, and I love you for the way that you are my anchor. My wife doesn't manage me like Miko manages Wayne. Mm. Wayne needs managing. And he's 67 and he's doing more than you could imagine a 40-year-old ever doing, running businesses and all the stuff they do. Anyway, my family is a living example of what happens after 50, and it's amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the answer to your question is, she is my anchor. I'm the live wire that's out there bouncing all over the place doing the stuff mm-hmm. I do to just allow this joy to come out of me, right? Mm-hmm. And all the projects and all the things I do with people and all the stuff I do. This is a lifetime of joy finally just bursting out of me. And she kind of like hold me down like a balloon that would fly away, right? Mm-hmm. She's that anchor that kind of, and I know she's there, so I can only spend so much and do so much and go so far because the woman I love needs me. Now, I need her more than she needs me. That's for darn sure. But that's what she is to me. It's not that she keeps me from relapsing. She's just a solid anchor for my life. Mm. So then if anything happens to her, you'll have to ask me that question again because I might go off the rails.
Somebody listening here is reflecting as they hear you talk. They can barely hear what you're saying because they're reflecting on the traumatic experience that they have been stuffing inside and haven't really dealt with it. What is your advice to that person right now?
Stop. Just stop a second. I mean, really stop. Like, as much as you can, stop the feelings. You need a moment of inner peace, because in that moment of peace, I call it the in-between. In that moment of peace between two moments of reality, you need to allow something to come out of you. And that is your idea of how you want your life to be. Really how you want your life to be. Without regard to any barriers that you could imagine. But stop thinking about your life long enough to hear and see and feel your true intention. Whether you feel like it was divinely given or randomly given or whatever. But what someone who's struggling misses because of all the noise, they miss that inner feeling, that inner knowing that reveals to you every moment, if you allow it, what you desire your destiny to be. That's what they need to do.
Good
stop
word.
And listen.
Right. Just stop and listen. Wow. In the course of my work, there is a definition of excellence that I like to hang around with, and that is excellence is defined as the act of becoming the fullest expression of your unique God-given design. You are living that from all intents and purposes. As I listen to all that you're involved in, the movies you're making, the work that you are doing to bring out joy, bring about joy in people's lives, you are being fully expressed. I believe that prior to the event when you exploded, and then on the heels of that, having a doctor ask you how you're doing. Great blessing, by the way. What a constructive awakening that you experienced. If we could all have that, if we could have rather than a destructive, bringing others down with us kind of moment that awakens us to the path of awareness of PTSD and doing something about it. And then not only that, but thriving now in your life. So we'll just call this living your best life. I know that's overused in a lot of circles, but if you were living your best life, it's not all roses and unicorns. Living this life of joy does not mean that you don't have bad days, right? I mean,
that's right.
You're not waking up every day on top of the world.
It's, you know, life, you can either let life happen to you or you can swim through it. And life is going to happen, and you can design some things and you can't design others. But every time that something happens to you, if you think of it not happening to you, but happening through you, this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. And that I will react in a way that will bring me joy. There's only two feelings in the world. There's only two true feelings in the human body. There's love and there's fear. And you can take any other feeling you have and you can put it into one of those two categories.
One of those two, right.
Love. And when you begin to let that roll through your head and you begin to let things fall into love more. My mother dying in front of my eyes and me holding her and her crying, putting her head on my shoulder and asking me why Jesus won't take her right then. I could have been fearful or I could have been loving. I asked her to put her head on my shoulder. It was the middle of the night, waiting for her medicine to take effect. And in that moment, we had a moment of love between a son and a mother. Mm-hmm. Instead of me being scared, I just loved her through it. Mm-hmm. And I loved myself through it too, even though I wasn't sure I was doing everything right. And I'm doing the best I can do.
Sure.
So I think it's about how we change our perspective of what's happening. Is life happening to me? Or is it just happening through me and I'm just swimming through it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so living this way is worth the pursuit. Don't give up. It's worth the pursuit. Joy is worth its pursuit. And here's something else that I'm picking out of reflecting on your life as you have graciously shared with us. Living our best existence by design cannot be done alone. You need other people. And I think that's because we were designed for community, don't you think?
There is, look, you know what, I don't want to get real philosophical here, but it's kind of like what we're doing. If you see your essence, that which makes you, you, that spark in your mind, so that when you look in the mirror, you see you, you. If your concept is that it's some separate thing from everything else, then you're missing the point. If you're able to see your energy, that spark in you, your spirit, that divine part of you, as being just that, a slice of God that has had the privilege of walking as a physical being on earth and having this thing called reality, then it's natural to be better together than to be better alone, because there's a greater force. There's the combination. There's that quantum expression where two people make more than two, it makes four. There's a greatness that comes with being with another human being. And the other thing is, I challenge people a second. What if our only purpose in living this life is that as a spiritual being, we don't know what it feels like to touch, to love, to have sorrow, to have joy? If the only way to feel these things is to be human, and the way that they're expressed even in a better way is when we do them with somebody else, so that when we're gone from this body and we're just that spiritual being, we can have the memory of what it was like to love another, to have compassion for another, then I say that's our job and we should do it well, and we need to be with others because that's the thing we should do.
Right.
Even if it's a little uncomfortable sometimes, that's human nature.
Well, sure. Yeah.
But you don't want to do it alone.
It's not perfect, but it is a calling. We were talking about, we are not humans having a spiritual experience. We're spirits having a human experience.
Yes. And why not just make the most of it?
Why not? It's all we have, right? I mean, what's right. The alternative? I would say, maybe as a bookend to our conversation, the alternative is disorder.
Yes.
Wow.
For sure.
Lance, you've been so enlightening, and you are a voice of joy. And thank it's you. Been a privilege talking with you. How can people find you? Where would we go?
Well, there's lanceabrams.com, which you'll see some things about me there. Mm-hmm. There's veterantoday.org, which is a lot of the love of my life is happening there in terms of my work at veterantoday.org. Mm-hmm. YouTube, I'm kind of cleaning up and putting some new videos up from before, okay. But if you Lance Abrams, A-B-R-I-M-S.
Okay.
Lance Abrams. On Amazon, you'll find my books there, and my first book is free. You can get it on Kindle for free. That's at lanceabrams.com. And then I think on my website, if you dig a little bit, you'll find links to all my other books, which I provided free audios out there. Okay. Yeah, I'm around.
And we will put all that in the show notes as well. If you're looking for a pick-me-up, listen to Lance, read Lance, watch Lance, see what he's doing. He does not come from a theoretical academic sense. He comes from real world experience. And thank you, Lance. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. There's not a greater gift than someone can give me than their attention. And for that gift, I'm very thankful. Thank you.
Beautiful. This has been another episode of the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast. I'm Scott Kochenour, and as always, I'm grateful for your time. I know that you could be doing all kinds of other stuff with your time. Maybe you're listening as you're driving to work, or you're maybe sweeping the floors as you're listening to this. I know there are hundreds of thousands of podcasts out there, and you've chosen to listen to mine. I want you to know I take that very seriously, and I consider it an honor. Be sure to visit the show notes for all the information you need from this episode, and subscribe to the podcast to get notified of the next episodes. I would love for you to give me a review, because that brings the podcast in front of more people. And if you believe in what we're talking about here on the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast, and you want to get the word out, the best way to do that is to share a review. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you next time.
This has been a Mission Matters Network production. Listen to this show and browse our entire catalog by visiting missionmatters.com.